Welcome to the Common Geeking Program. We are a book club podcast for geek culture. Normally, each week, we have a few people discussing things from geeky, nerdy perspectives, but this week, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently. My name is Colin, and today we're talking about Star Trek Discovery. I am joined by...
Hi, this is Laura, and today I will be talking about Star Trek Discovery.
So we're talking about the same thing. In episode 37, we had a franchise special about Star Trek. That episode came out 2 days before this new television show premiered. If you want all the backstory on the franchise, we summed it up. As of this point, Star Trek Discovery, which aired on CBS All Access, has aired 9 episodes and is in a mid-season hiatus until January.
January 7th. Can't come back soon enough.
January 7th. Oh, man, that's sooner than I thought. I thought it was going to be later in January. Basically, then we're going to get the rest of the season. Laura and I just kind of wanted to talk about it because we've both been watching the show. And I think it's safe to say we are both big fans.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
So we have a few talking points we want to go through. Really just kind of want to sum up our thoughts in a format where we don't have to account for all the non-Trekkies, all the unpure people in our podcast group.
Ooh, unpure is a hard one for me to swallow.
Now, I am going to have to sound the spoiler alert.
Spoilers.
So if you're already planning on watching Discovery, maybe don't listen to this right just yet.
Indeed.
So we're just going to address some of the expectations we had for the show. I know I had a lot of expectations going in.
As did I. Yeah. We're going to talk about what expectations we had and whether or not we thought they were met, exceeded, expected more, how we feel about it. And generally, what's to come.
So one of the big tentpoles of Star Trek that I tried to talk about in our franchise special, what was the episode called again? It's not that bad. I think that was the name of the episode.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Star Trek, in all its iterations over the last 51 years, has always been about optimism and always been about how humans can try to get along better. Star Trek was a social justice warrior before there were social justice warriors.
I've had some actually really interesting conversations. I work with a gentleman who is African-American and older, and we talk about Star Trek a lot because it had a huge impact on his life where... You know, Uhura was a black woman who was on the show and in a time when that wasn't a thing. So, yeah, definitely social issues are brought to light a lot in these shows. And I am interested to see how that continues. And I liked the way that it started. So,
yeah, in particular, Uhura, fun story. You know, the network execs were like, hey, Gene Roddenberry, you can't have a black woman on the bridge. And he was like, oh, if you fire her, then I pull the plug on the show. And they were like, all right. Then Nichelle Nichols was like, I'm going to leave the show. And Martin Luther King Jr. was like, no, you got to stay on the show. Like, please, this is important. And it was.
Yeah.
So the reason that this was a concern of mine before the show came out is all of the trailers and previews were depicting a war between the human... centric group known as the Federation and the Klingons, who are an antagonistic alien species. And it seemed like the whole show was going to focus on this dark, dour, like Game of Thrones style, like power struggle.
And that was a huge concern that I had also, is that not only was it really dark and about this war and it all seemed very violent, it also seemed very action oriented not at all social or mental.
The interesting thing about the show, it's got 9 episodes, but the first 2 kind of play out like a movie and almost like a prologue. Like, the show really picks up on episode 3. Episodes 1 and 2 are a prologue, and they are a very action-heavy prologue. So after that first week...
I was nervous.
Yeah, I remember talking to you. That did not, like, assuage your fears at all.
Nope. No, it did not.
But there was one line in particular, and I like the main character's name is Michael Burnham. She's a black woman played by Sonequa Martin-Green from The Walking Dead, and her character is a human that was raised by Vulcans. And one admiral makes like a comment about it. It's like, yeah, your race shouldn't come into this, and she's like, it would be wise not to confuse race and culture. So even though we had like this like very kind of dark projection of what the show would be, like as soon as I heard that line, I was like, okay, they're trying to at least have a dialogue. They're trying to at least be open-minded about things vocally instead of just letting it ride in the background. And I think as soon as we hit episode 3 and we're introduced to the Starship Discovery, we really start to see more of that. We're introduced to a lot of characters, all of whom are very upset because it's wartime.
Right.
But I don't know, Laura, how did you feel about trying to string that happiness and optimism through a war story?
I think that I kind of let that go a little bit, honestly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I think that if you are telling a war story, I don't need it to be about how happy everything is and how great humans are getting along with other species. And that was difficult. I think it was hard for me to let go of that. I don't think it's gone from my consciousness of what I would like the show to provide next half of the season and onwards. But I was able to really just say, like, this is a show set in a time when things are not perfect. This is not going to be the same as all of my other series. This is not going to be, you know, Next Generation, which is, you know, still my favorite Star Trek. That is what mm-hmm. Star Trek is to me. And it took me probably like 4 or 5 episodes, which I know is a lot out of a 9-episode run, to really start just enjoying Discovery for its own being and not for what I would have wanted it to be or what the other series are.
Yeah,
so I'm not like gone, but I think I kind of let it go a little bit to just let it be the story that it is.
Yeah, I was kind of bating my breath, waiting for them to spotlight on some, like, you know, struggles around this in the show. Because at first, even up through episode 5, it's like it's all about the war in different ways. I think it was in episode 8, C.S. Vichem Parabellum, I think is the name of the episode, where you encounter the Pavans, which is a race of like non-corporeal, just like a shared consciousness entity that is all about seeking peace. And like for peace, the last 2 episodes of the run, there's a lot of focus on we need to protect these peace-loving people. Like our duty is to do the right thing by them. And I think it did take a little while because the show had to like get its own legs. But I think that's just probably the example that made me feel like, oh my God, these are the warm, caring Starfleet officers that I'm used to.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting. I literally have a note. We just watched this series finale to kind of get into this. And I have a note that Captain Lorca is just not at all the captain that you've seen before in a lot of ways. And so the perspective that we're getting on the Federation, it's very distant from what we're used to seeing from the Federation because Lorca is a military man and he comes from that perspective. And so we're on his ship. Of course, that's what we're going to see. But it was nice to see him also stand up and just be like, hell no, like we're not leaving Paavos to get destroyed. Like we have to stay here and make sure that it's safe. Mm-hmm.
And the way that they moved into showing Paavo addresses another thing that our guest Luke talked about on episode 37, which is Star Trek. This is a show from an earlier time, 60s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, that's when it was all in the air, where you didn't have big, long serial shows like Game of Thrones. Mm. You had, Adventure of the Week, procedurals. You had an adventure, and then the next week, it kind of just reset.
Yep.
And we were told up front that this show was going to be like a long-form story like Game of Thrones or like Breaking Bad, but...
Or like Voyager.
Or like,
Voyager. A little serious, but also definitely a joke.
It seemed like it was supposed to be that. And then Voyager was like, why do anything new? It's fine. But this show, the first few episodes felt like that completely serial story. Mm. And then in episode 6, Lethe, we get a random encounter with Sarek. And then the next one after is a time loop episode with Mud.
Which might have been my favorite episode.
Oh, God, it was so much fun. And that
it was really fun.
Once I saw that episode, I was like, this has very little to do with the Klingon War. They were just like, hey, this sounds like a really fun idea. Fuck it, let's do it.
And that definitely felt more more Trek at heart to me because the end was just such a like...
It was goofy.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like a goofy end where you were like, wait, really? Like, I thought it was all going to be... Harvey Mudd basically tries to take over Discovery.
Harcourt Fenton Mudd.
I'm sorry. Yes, Mud McMud is trying to take over the Discovery, and he's like killing people left and right. It's really dark. You're worried about what's going to happen. He's got this crazy time travel machine that's making him able to loop whatever it is, 30 minutes or whatever. And then at the end, like, he's this big villain, and at the end, he gets roped in by like having to marry this woman and like, you know, getting settled down because her dad's like, oh, well, you need the dowry, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just such a funny moment where you're like, oh, God, he's taken down so easily. Like, it just really took the wind out of his sails.
That episode brought the cheese in a lot of ways.
It did.
We also got a really fun love story between Burnham and the character Ash Tyler, where time kept resetting and they had no memory of it. But in each like loop of time that Mud kept putting them through, they kept like exploring new aspects of their relationship. Because this, the character of Stamets was telling them what was up. And at the end of the episode, he says the line, it sucks that we missed our first kiss.
Yeah.
Like, it was I loved that. It was such a goofy, but scary, but interesting episode.
It was a great episode.
It really was. And even though it had, I think, some holes in it, that was the first episode where I felt like, okay, they're managing to keep a consistent style and grow the cast like a serial show. Mm. But this episode came out of left field, man.
Yeah.
It felt so good.
Yeah. I think that if they can keep on dropping those every once in a while, I'll be happy.
With kind of the darkness in mind, you also had another very big concern going into the show, which was the aesthetic.
Yeah, and part of that is, it's so hard because the Trek that I grew up with was Next Gen, obviously, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, they all look the same. I've never watched not exactly the same, but they look very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never watched the original series, and I hadn't seen Enterprise until fairly recently, and Enterprise is probably the most visually different.
Yes.
And so to me, Star Trek is that next gen.
Yeah.
And the Discovery is not like that at all. There's almost nothing that's similar.
Yeah, so if you've ever seen the new Star Trek movies, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Star Trek Beyond, those movies take place in an alternate timeline, but they have a much more modern aesthetic where things are shiny. J.J. Abrams got his reputation for lens flares from those movies.
But they also spoke to original Trek and the Trek I'm used to by keeping the uniform colors. So, you know, red is security or...
Yeah, it's whatever. Security and operations. Gold
blue
is command.
Science. Gold
blue is science, yeah. And Discovery really kind of matches the aesthetic of those Kelvin movies, but it's in this weird, uncomfortable place in the timeline because it takes place before the original series. But the original series was made 51, 52 years ago.
Right.
Technology has changed.
Yeah.
As far as the aesthetic, I was actually pretty impressed that they did a good job towing that line. Clearly, they had to break some rules for the sake of keeping up with a television audience. But what I noticed is, if you look at the prequel series of Enterprise, you've got a lot of colorful TV screens, but everything is controlled by physical buttons.
Right.
Whereas in the Next Generation, which is in the future, everything is touchscreen. Because the original series, everyone commanded the ship using a series of light brights. And that was basically... All the control panels were just lit up jelly-colored buttons.
Right.
And Discovery did not let go of the touchscreen thing, because clearly we have touchscreens now. It wouldn't make sense to just let go of that. But there are actually a lot of physical command switches and buttons all over the place. A lot of like juts and support beams coming out from the sides of things that you would see in the original series as well. So I think they did a nice job balancing it.
Yeah, I think they did pretty well. I mean, I think there's no way... I think they set themselves an impossible task in a way because they've chosen to go 10 years before the original series took place. And like, that's a decision that they decided to, I mean, that's a decision they went with. And I will never understand. I'm appreciating Discovery. I enjoy Discovery. I wouldn't necessarily change it. But I'd never understand when people decide, instead of moving forward in a timeline to do, you know, the world is your oyster, you can make whatever you want of it, to force yourself into the impossible task of bridging something that has been around for 70 years. Like, you know, why are you going to go before that instead of open up the future? And I get that they wanted to discover this one particular storyline of, you know, how did this all happen and how did the Klingon War happen?
Yeah.
But it seemed to me that there was a way to do that without kind of sticking themselves in that position. Like, they chose to do that. So I think that they...
Yeah. I agree with you. And in particular, I think the uniforms, I love the uniform design in this show. It really does bridge the gap between the Enterprise prequel series uniforms and the original series uniforms. I think they're gorgeous. Even the book
They're good.
I read the only Star Trek Discovery book, Desperate Hours, that's out right now. It was not a very good book, but it did give like a lot of really cool information. And it's like, it even commented on how the uniforms are changing. And I'm just like, it must have been so hard to make that, just to make that decision. Yeah. Like, do we have to change this? Yes. The answer is yes. It has to look like its own show.
Of course.
And it really, it does. So I guess I agree with you. Like, that's an impossible task, but I also think...
But they did a good job managing that.
They did. And there's some ambiguity in the story that I'll address in a little bit that might actually justify some of this.
Yes.
I guess the last bullet point that you and I wanted to talk about was the cast.
So, love the cast.
So yeah, they did a bang up job with these, with the casting and with the characters themselves. Michael Burnham being the protagonist, she is,
and she's great. She's probably like my least favorite character. Like, she's great. Yeah. She does a good job, but like,
I've had that conversation with another one of my friends as well. It's like, yeah, she's just so bland. And it's like, if you think of like the sterile mindset of a Vulcan, and then a human trying to ignore the things that make a person compelling. To be that boring Vulcan, it kind of strips some of that interest away. I think that everything about her journey is painted perfectly, but I understand how she as a character is not as appealing.
Yeah, I think it's not that I don't... it's not that she's my least favorite character. It's that I don't want to see her story when it's just her. I need her to be interacting with other people, which is okay. But I think that there are characters on the show that I'm interested in for them as individuals. And I think that she needs somebody to play off of because of that Vulcan-human aspect.
I think I feel similarly about Lieutenant Saru, or Commander Saru, as of episode 3. Commander Saru is a very tall alien played by the... monster actor Doug Jones. Tons of makeup, tons of prosthetics, but he's a very like scared alien, and like that sort of thing works well when it's part of a dialogue, but like the shtick of Saru is scared of things,
right?
I don't think that
goes so far.
I don't think that sustains itself, but I think it gives him good dynamics with other characters.
Agreed. I think that it would make a really, really good series comic, like an internet comic, like O'Brien at Work. I think someone could make a really good like Saru being scared of things comic every day. I would read that.
Any listeners, if you have ever seen Star Trek The Next Generation, go look O'Brien at Work, the character of Miles O'Brien in like just boring daily situations. It's fantastic.
It's really funny.
My favorite character on the show, without any question, and one of my favorite Star Trek characters is...
I'm trying really hard not to go.
Captain Gabriel Lorca.
He's so good!
He's unbelievably good. Jason Isaacs. So good. Plays this captain. It's the first time that the captain is not the star of the show, but holy shit.
He's still the star of the show.
He's the star of the show.
He
plays like this calm, almost relaxed, drawly sort of character, but with a constant like sense of urgency behind everything he says. Even when Burnham is like, hey, I want to go down there. He's like, I don't give a damn. And then the other person's like, I should go with her. He's like, I still don't give a damn. Just do it. And it's like, it's totally irreverent in a way we've never seen a captain be in the show.
Yeah.
But I felt it totally believable and endearing.
I loved it. I loved it so much. I have a couple notes about him from our watch of the finale. He's incredibly manipulative in a way that other captains are not.
Nonstop. Always.
And it's amazing because, you know, he comes out, you watch the first couple of episodes and you get to see episode 3 where you're first introduced to him as the captain of this weird, crazy ship. And he's like sitting alone in a dark office because he's got this eye problem. And Burnham gets pulled off of this prison ship to, you know, get quote unquote repairs, but there's definitely something else going on there. And she's like, who the fuck is this guy sitting in the dark, like menacing, standing back there being very mysterious? And he comes across as an incredible villain. And I was expecting to love to hate him. Mm-hmm. And instead, I just love him.
I just love him. Yeah.
He's so good.
It's weird. Laura, have you watched Breaking Bad?
I have seen a couple of seasons of Breaking Bad. I never finished it.
So the interesting thing about Breaking Bad is that it chronicles the devolution of a character from a good guy to like a really terrible guy. And the mindfuck of that show is this is a terrible person, but you're still rooting for him, like start to finish. And I remember rooting for him. And it's weird because Lorca is not the star of this show and is very clearly doing some wrong things. He does bad things to Ash Tyler.
Yeah.
He lies to Admiral Cornwell when she boards the ship.
He's definitely working with PTSD, so he's not fit for duty.
Yeah, and he admitted he is mentally unwell. And even though he is pulling all these strings to fuck with all these people, he is like the person I care about the most. Want him to be okay.
Yep.
He lost a starship under his command, and I so badly want that to reconcile for him so he can be healthy.
Yeah. He does such a great job. He does whatever needs to be done, whether or not the action is evil, but he himself is not an evil character. And I just think that is not something that any other Star Trek show does. They all have the captains being these, you know, pillars of morality and goodness in the Federation. And Lorca is this guy who is so damaged and broken and and incredibly human. And just so compelling. I just love everything he does.
Yeah. And this is not to shortchange the other characters, the other regulars of Sylvia Tilly and Paul Stamets.
I love everyone. But Ash Tyler is great.
This is a bang-up cast, front to back. Something that you and I disagree on regarding the cast of this show is there is a cast of Klingon characters, and those aliens have been significantly redesigned.
Talk about aesthetics.
Yeah, so they look very different. I absolutely love the Klingons in this show, and this is as someone who has never been interested in the Klingon storylines in Star Trek before, but here we get a story about internal power struggles as the Klingon Empire has 24 different major parties trying to get control of the Empire, and they're basically falling apart. And we get to follow some of them through the Klingon War, particularly Volk, Laurel, and Cole. Volk disappears. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Laurel and Cole are constantly like... Cole is the leader of the Empire, trying to get all the Klingons united under his banner.
He did it in a very Klingon way, where he stole the ship outside, out from under Volk's feet, basically. Mm-hmm. And Laurel is into Volk, and so she doesn't like that move, and also has aspirations of her own, it seems. So they're on kind of opposite ends of the spectrum there on the Klingon houses. Yeah.
So I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I really like the Klingons in this show because we get to see their ambitions and we get to see who they are beyond the stereotype of like these drunk, fear-mongering people.
What it feels to me still. They still feel like exactly the same. Their motivations are the same. Like their fights are the same. They all just want power. And it doesn't do it for me. I'm still not interested in them.
That's fair.
Spoiler alert, I have opposite feelings from Colin.
I would encourage you to watch for yourselves. I know that this has not been like a typical summary that we do on this show, but I know we haven't been coherent about the plot enough to really spoil a whole bunch.
But let's do that, shall we?
Yeah, before we sign off, there are two things that, Laura, I want to ask you about, both of which are fan theories.
I have them both written down, I think.
Yes. So,
although we did not specifically discuss.
No. So the first fan theory that I want to get your input on is that when the character of Volk disappeared, that Klingon from the first few episodes, in the very next episode, we are introduced to that character that you love so much, Ash Tyler. And there is a fan theory that Volk is Ash Tyler, that he's been altered to become a human or look human. And in the series finale, Laurel, the Klingon who was torturing Ash Tyler, is like saying to him.
And also having sex with him.
And also having sex with Ash Tyler against his will, sort of. We're not sure yet.
Depends on who he actually is.
Yeah, it's bad. Basically, Ash Tyler is like, what's going on? And she's like, I'll never let them hurt you. Lending credence to either maybe he is Volk, or maybe Volk's consciousness was implanted in him as a means of espionage or subterfuge. I have a lot of thoughts on this, but I'm really curious, like, how does this read to you as someone who might not be as obsessive about it as I am?
I am somebody that doesn't like to read into the future of TV shows. I've never been one to try to figure out what's going to happen next. I like to just kind of enjoy watching to find out. And so I've been enjoying kind of reading a little bit about these fan theories, but it's not something that I spend a lot of time thinking about or trying to dig into. I've been back and forth on this since I knew it was a fan theory, that like, no, I don't think it's true. Like, maybe it is. No, I don't think so. It'd be really stupid. So I have some feelings about it that are pretty conflicted. This most recent episode, this mid-season finale, definitely made me feel like there is something to that. But I don't know what it is. And I think that I wouldn't necessarily be as happy as if it was just Voke being plastic surgeried into a human. I think that there has to be something more complicated than that, partly because Ash's backstory checked out when he became a member of the Discovery. They wouldn't have just been able to create a human. And Ash wouldn't be as human if he had originally started as a Klingon. There's no way that he would have
He totally all fits into emotions. The culture and things like that.
So I'm intrigued, but I don't know.
The other fan theory regards a classic Trek thing called the Mirror Universe, which is an alternate universe where everybody has an evil counterpart and Spock has a goatee. So
beautiful.
in the show, the USS Discovery has the ability to jump around space, and in the finale, it's revealed that they can use that to see alternate universes. Mm. Now, the fan theory is that Captain Lorca actually comes from the Mirror Universe, that he is actually an evil version of Lorca who has replaced the real one, which sounds like really shitty 60s TV, I know, but I totally buy into this, like 100%.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Yes. I think that there's a really good chance, but as we were watching, of course, Colin is a man who pays attention to detail in this means, but there is a time when he's typing into his computer pad on where they're going to head next in this final jump that Stamets is going to make, and there is an override that he decides to choose called Lorca G.
And then the ship fucking ends up in the middle of goddamn nowhere.
In a place where they don't understand where the stars are or what's real.
And there's ship wreckage with red paint, which is typical of the Mirror Universe Terran Empire ships. I'm completely convinced. His line to Cornwell kind of feeds into it too, because she was like, hey, remember when we did this when we were younger? He's like, nah, whatever, let's have sex. And then when they have sex, he has these scars on his back that she's like, what the hell is this?
And they were big scars, and there were a lot of them. Like, you don't get that from falling down a flight of stairs. Because apparently that's my injury.
Was Lorca pregnant? Oh, God.
No. But I think, you know, I wouldn't be okay if they just go over to a Mirror Universe and they're like, oh, everyone's evil over here. I think that it has to be more complicated than that. I definitely think that there's a chance that he is not from the universe that we're used to seeing the Federation in. I feel like maybe there's a chance he's from an alternate universe and he accidentally took them to a different alternate universe, so even he won't know what's going on, which I would like. I would enjoy that. So
this is where I think the final thing I want to touch on in this follow-up episode is, earlier I said there may be some justifications for why things are different. We've been told that the show takes place in what's called the Prime Timeline. So it exists in the same space as the original series and as the Next Generation. But now we have a ship that is potentially jumping through universes. Right. And we're wondering, I read an article online
that,
I read something online dubbing it Lost in the Multiverse as a possible setup for the rest of the show. So maybe these first 9 episodes have just been set up
for a totally new kind of show. Yeah, I mean, they took 2 episodes to set up the first half of the season, and I thought that was totally unnecessary. So I could see them painting a whole, it gives them just so much more to work with. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the way you get around setting a season before, you know, 10 years before the original series airs, is that you suddenly give them an opportunity to get stuck somewhere where everything is different and you can go anywhere.
Exactly. And that's what they did with the Kelvin movies, is they've shifted to a new universe to make sure that they had creative license without breaking the canon. And that comes to what I think I love about this series the most, is it has surprised me every single episode.
Yep.
Every time I thought I knew what was going on, they threw something at us. When the first two episodes ended and I was like, oh, wait, we don't know what's going to happen next. We haven't seen the Starship Discovery.
Yeah.
I've just been blown away. And then they threw that Harry Mudd episode at us.
So good.
The magic says make the sanest man go mad. It is constantly delighting me how I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. And I think that if that's what they're doing, it's kind of the redemption for Voyager. Voyager gets a lot of shit for not being the greatest series of Star Trek, but you know, it's an interesting idea where these people get thrown so far from home and they have to journey to get back to where they're from, and you know, maybe this Discovery ship is somewhere totally far from home and everybody's trying to figure out how to get back, and that it just gives so much to that overarching storyline of how these characters are growing and developing together as they go through this incredibly traumatic experience.
Yeah.
But also giving you enough license to have those episodes that are just story of the week, adventuring, and throwing things in. So I'm into it. I think it's really fun.
Yeah, I think it's great. Star Trek Discovery returns January 7th to CBS All Access. Any listeners who plan to tune in, chat us up. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Geeking Program. And you can find me at Sonic Colin K. That's Sonic O-L-I-N-K. Because I will literally talk to anybody about Star Trek. And if anyone doesn't want to like pay monthly for this, there's a free trial for CBS All Access. So you could just go and sign up for that, binge it all in a day, and kind of see how you feel about it. But either way, it's...
Yeah, it's really good.
Basically, all the concerns that we had in episode 37 of our podcast, I think, have been addressed. I'm very pleased. I have some issues, but I'm pleased.
Yeah, I have some issues, but I mean, something that we discussed briefly as we were kind of going through watching week by week, there is no question, I think, in anyone's mind that this is the best first season of a Star Trek series.
Oh, ever. No question at all. This is hopefully setting the standard for what these shows can be in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm pleased. Well, thank you, Laura. I've had a nice time talking about it. I've been purposefully not talking to you as much about the show because I knew we were going to have this little recap. So any of you listening, thanks for listening. We might do more of these in the future. We'll find out.
Let us know if you like them, because if you do, we can do more.
Yeah, they're a lot easier to make than regular episodes. That is for sure.
Indeed. Yeah.
I guess that's it.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
This Common Geeking Program interlude features Colin Ketchin and Laura Kramer discussing Star Trek Discovery as a follow-up to CGP's episode 37, It's Not That Bad. This episode is sponsored by Laura's Resistance to Change. Klingons have two dicks now. Get over it. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levin, with this episode edited by me, Colin Ketchin, and featuring original music by me. We'll be back with another interlude next week as we continue tweaking CGP proper, and we'll have more follow-ups planned for Stranger Things, Samurai Jack, and more. So stay tuned for that, and thank you for listening to this.
Hang on a second. Charles is talking in the kitchen right now, so.
Yeah, not a problem.
I'm gonna kick him in the butt with my foot. If he just stays down. I don't know what the fuck he's doing. He's just standing in the kitchen with his headset on, talking to his friends upstairs. Charles, how long are you going to be down here for? How long are you down here for?
More seconds.
Okay. It was a not so subtle hint that he should leave.
Yes.
I think he got it.
Did you just wink at your boyfriend?
I did.
That was so cute.
Thanks.
Oh my God.